week, I'm joined by my good friend, Colin Miller, a.k.a. DJ Mills, longtime Arsenal supporter, avid French national team supporter as well, and good friend of mine, in front of the podcast, and happy to have him on before he leaves the fine West Coast and returns to the eastern regions of New York and New Jersey and all that fun stuff. Good to have you, Colin.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on in a very auspicious week. You know, first podcast. Glad we're doing this after 1-0 over City and not getting hammered or something.
Yeah, I think maybe the request might not have been met with the same verve and excitement. Or such a quick, easy, like, yep, I'm ready to talk this week. We had a good fucking week. Arsenal beat Manchester City 1-0. First time in 12 years, something that the Premier League and the NBC, Peacock, whatever entity were very happy to remind us every 10 seconds.
Over and over again.
That it hadn't happened in 12 matches, 12 straight defeats to Manchester City. I'll be honest, I was not that, like, I knew that this squad had the potential in them to beat Manchester City. And especially early in the season, them losing Kevin De Bruyne, it's been a huge thing. And I think this is directly tied to Erling Haaland's lack of productivity so far this season. But we'll get into that a little more in time. But, you know, City are a little more vulnerable, but missing Bukayo Saka, missing Gabriel Martinelli, at least from the starting lineup, I fucking didn't. I had no idea he was even had a chance coming into the match. You know, I saw him on the bench, but I was like, that's more, I don't know, it's just posturing. Like, what is he really going to play?
Yeah. Or like a emergency sub kind of situation.
Right, like 70, 80 minutes, like not at halftime. I mean, obviously the conditions and, you know, the fact that that Trossard felt something in his hamstring obviously altered the decision-making and made it easier for, I think it might have made it a little bit easier for Arteta to make a real game-changing sub earlier than he normally would. Based on what transpired with the injury and the tightness that he felt, you know, we definitely can't lose. You don't want to push Trossard much longer than have to be reliant on Martinelli.
No, I mean, Trossard is that player, is that sort of super sub for us. So if you lose him, it's actually quite a big blow, I think, to the team.
Yeah,
to the versatility.
Because you're saying Reece Nelson or Emile Smith Rowe, and as much as we hope that kind of productivity could be replaced and replicated. You know, the numbers don't add up quite yet that's the case, you know. I would love to see, in especially right now, with that potentially being a injury that keeps Trossard out at least for a week or two, to maybe see Emile Smith Rowe get that nod as the first sub on.
Yeah.
Because I think there's more to be seen there. I think we know what we get with Reece.
Yeah.
And when Vieira came in for Saka last week, you know, midweek against Long, like, that was not, you could tell that's not where he really impacts
a
match.
Yeah, he's an interior player for sure.
Yeah, he's
an essential player. You know, that's the thing that's so great about Trossard and why you look at that signing and you're like, 26 million or whatever he paid seems like a bargain, because he can play in like five different positions. He's not the best at all of them. He's got different things that he's good at, but he's at least adaptable across the front, most of the front line, and into the midfield, and that's so valuable. But I think we definitely miss something on the subs when we not using ESR. Like, I think his directness can really will come in handy in games coming into the season, but obviously not in this game. We didn't need him because we fucking beat Man City.
Sure did, and Martinelli was the man who got it done. Yeah, as far as like, so shape wise, I believe, you know, with a variety of players at different levels of fitness and coming back in, you know, there had been some hope that that Kai Havertz would remain dropped because he hasn't been very impactful. I think those of us that were hoping that maybe Partey would be fit enough to start to play alongside Declan Rice, because that's probably in a match against City, that's probably the best defensive matchup you could put up against them. And, you know, we didn't get that, but we got Jorginho instead. So Jorginho holding with, you know, with Declan playing a little more all action left center mid, which is something I do want to see him play there a little more. You know, currently,
I mean, if he plays like he played this past Sunday, he can play there all the time.
he can play either fucking one. And once Partey's fit, I mean, honestly, even with Jorginho there, like, that actually worked pretty well. We hadn't really seen that organization of it quite yet. He was coming in as like a direct sub.
I mean, Jorginho to me, like, another, this is one of the great things about this team, I think, right now. One of the genius things that Arteta has been able to do has been assembled this crew of people of like young, hungry players, and then some kind of wily, like, not, they're not old, but Jorginho's not old, but you know, he's in the end of his career, and he's in a role where he seems happy to be like a good impact sub or around as a training ground presence. But then when you need the kind of like steely, cagey guy who's got to circulate the ball, do the tactical stuff, stay in position for this game because we're playing a bunch of fucking robots who are, you know, the best coach team in the world. He comes in really handy for those kind of situations.
Yeah, today, you know, he didn't give any balls to to Tottenham for equalizing goals, so he was okay by me this time around. So with that said, that was a little different shape from Mikel Arteta in the way we were positioned. The defense was just the way we expected it. Our normal starting back four. We'll get to a little more about them in a bit as well. Outstanding defensive performance from Arsenal all around. I mean, and you have to give credit to, you know, everyone from the front to back. It's, you know, from those central midfielders, Jorginho and Declan, and everyone in the back four, all really, really put in a shift. You know, I thought Zinchenko had a pretty good defensive game as well. You know, we don't see it all that often.
Looked really, I mean, I think he was helped a little bit by the fact that, you know, City wanted to play through the middle of the park. They didn't have a lot. They were trying to get the fullbacks forward a lot in the wing. So that's a little easier for Zinchenko to deal with than having to deal with somebody who's a really, like, a handful, kind of, you know, natural, speedy winger. But I thought he was great. The defense obviously acquitted themselves quite well. It is absolutely insane to me that William Saliba is 22 years old. I mean, it does not... Yeah. I was not doing that kind of shit when I was 22.
Yeah, that man is a Rolls-Royce defender. Like, that's just, like, I replayed that video of him fucking shouldering Haaland off the ball. It's like cutting him off, completely big, you know, bullying him, just fucking showing him who's the man, cut across him. And yeah, like, dude, no one's, you know, when the 6'5" fucking Viking runs across a guy and then falls to the floor like that, it's like, yo, bro, like, you're a monster. You just went shoulder to shoulder with another monster, and you came off second best. We're going to get a little more to Michael Oliver as well in a bit. I mean, that was a good decision for him to not.
That might be a whole other podcast.
That could be a whole other podcast in itself.
An investigative series going to Qatar and other places to find the money.
Yeah. I mean, well, yeah, that's, oh boy. Integrity.
I mean,
Integrity Farms. Yeah. None of that shit here. Well, So offensively, the way we set up, the one thing I thought, like, I actually really do like Gabriel Jesus probably is our best option on the right wing if Saka can't play, but then we're losing something and not having him through the middle. Like, you know, Eddie put himself around, you know, he worked hard, but, you know, Jesus was pretty much the only one that was really offering us much spark. You know, when those balls would get out to that right side, you know, you felt that little sense of danger. You know, we didn't really have that on the other side. Trossard wasn't really at the races today. The other day, and doesn't give you that threat down the wing the way that Martinelli does. And so having Nketiah through the middle, he was working hard. He got in some good places. You know, he had a chance or two. He had that one shot that he doesn't look that great on replay. You know, initially from the normal angle, it looks like it's a pretty good shot, but it was nowhere near close to target when.
Yeah, and you know, he was playing against again the best team in the world, a team that is coached like no other. They just won the treble. They were really jamming up the box and putting, as soon as we got any kind of attacking intent, everybody snapped back on their end into their positions. It was really hard to get any creative stuff. And, you know, Eddie, like, I like Eddie. I think he's a really serviceable striker for certain games, maybe for another team. But you can't say he doesn't work hard. You can't say he's not talented. He is a good guy. But he is in some ways just like a less talented Gabriel Jesus. I mean, and you see when Jesus is out on the right wing in this game, I mean, he starts coming inside with all the tricks and just like the ferocity that he plays with. He just looks like he wants to murder everybody with the ball every time he touches the ball. And that's great. That's what you need.
Yeah. Killer instinct and killer intent. You know, like he has bad, you know, he's thinking about how to hurt you every time he has the ball.
I mean, Martinelli is the same way.
Right. Absolutely.
And, you know, I was kind of watching Kyle Walker's face when Martinelli came on in the tunnel and he's like, Oh, okay.
Shit, he's here.
Like, now I got to get out of second gear and actually, you know, and Martinelli made his life fucking hell the first couple minutes of that second half.
You know, one thing I really enjoyed it, you know, at full time, he was having a go at Ben White and, you know, this and that. And it's like, that's also because in due time, there will be a day when Gareth Southgate is no longer the England manager. And if that's after the next fucking Euro Cup or whatever it is, you know, if they fail to make the finals with the team they fucking have this next Euros, you got to let that motherfucker go, which is also a conversation for nothing. But anyways, the Kyle Walker staring in the future, his position in the England team, because once, you know, the next cycle, there's no way Kyle Walker should be the starting right back after that. And it should be Ben White.
Yeah. I mean, Ben White probably would rather go home and like garden his tomatoes or something.
Or take his girl to Ibiza or whatever.
Yeah, it was also Nicholas Jover and Kyle Walker were going at it. And
yeah.
I have a feeling it was something from that last City game because, you know, they were being real dickheads with the Zinchenko thing. And
oh, right. Yeah, they definitely were.
You know, you could tell, though, they're sort of, I mean, you win that much and you have a guy like Pep, who's your leader, who's a complete psychopath. I mean, and not in a terrible way. Like, you have to be that kind of competitive person, but you're not used to this. You're at the Emirates. People are belting out North London forever at the end of the game, going wild. And yeah, they're not used to that feeling. And they got all pissy and then tried to get into a fight with like an older man.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're talking about the after game. I got ahead of myself. We were talking about the first half to start. So basically, all that aside, the vibes from the first half, like basically the mood and like it did feel like a 10, you know, the same way a lot of like championship fights in boxing or any kind of combat sport like that, where people go out and they feel, you know, they throw some jabs, right? No one's throwing haymakers. There's not big punches. People aren't taking risks. No one wants to get knocked out in the first round. I think there's a big, you know, there's been a lot of times in the past couple of years, we've come out and we've gone on the front foot and we got forward in the first 10, 15, 20 minutes. Kind of put them under some pressure, but always, pretty much every time, because as we've lost the past 12 fucking times in a row, we would get caught on the break after a near make, right? So there's a near a chance where we almost score something, and we leave ourselves open, and then all of a sudden we're down 1-0, and we start chasing it. We're down 2-0 at fucking halftime.
Yep.
And there's a lot to be said about, as much as it was kind of boring to watch and kind of tepid, and I was sitting there like, fuck, man, I knew it was partially personnel, which was affecting it, but also the fact that, like, you know, you can't really win a match against City in the first half, but you sure as fuck can lose one.
Yeah.
And
we almost did in the fourth minute.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, so we were saying, you know, at the end, like, they, you know, they had 0.53 XG to our 0.44 or something along those lines. And I think pretty much 0.50 of that 0.53 or whatever it was all from those two chances back to back at, you know, fourth, fifth minute, whatever it was, when there was a header off the line and the follow up where Ake really should have scored.
Really, yeah, he really missed the sitter there. Poor, I hate to say poor clearance because it's from Gabriel Jesus, but it was a kind of chaos in the box there. You know, as much as I mean, we were texting during the game and I was kind of like, this is kind of boring and whatever. But David Raya certainly didn't make it boring in the first 20 minutes.
God, I was
gave me a few heart attacks in there. Yeah,
the blocked clearance from, I had flashes of it all being over when Julian Alvarez blocked that clearance and it went into the side netting. I was like, oh God. Like, okay, that's on the outside of the net. Oh, breathe.
Yeah, but they grew into the half and I think they grew into the game plan and they settled down. Well, it was nice to watch an Arsenal team actually not do the hell for leather thing, you know, and go, like you were saying, go all out. And it was nice to watch them kind of learn in real time the lessons and be like, okay, well, now we need to get possession, circulate the ball, play our game, wait, and not just go, you know, full tilt. Obviously, yeah. Since they didn't have Saka or Martinelli, they're not going to be doing as much exciting shit down the wings.
You can't have the same plan.
Yeah, you can't.
I mean, to be honest, though, with all that in like considered, even if those guys were fit and starting, I think we still probably would have seen a slightly more conservative approach because the same sentiment that going too far with it to start could really overexpose us. And the last thing we want to do is be out of this game or be down one or two goals by halftime. So, you know, keep it 0-0 till halftime, try to nick a goal, play conservative, and see what you can do. Now, City were afforded this chance to be playing with 11 players it was a very generous thing, something we need to talk about. So specifically, when we're talking about the integrity game and all that, Michael Oliver books Jorginho for, his first foul of the game.
A normal foul for pulling somebody back, a normal soft yellow.
You know, his first 10 minutes. Sometimes, you know they can get away with one of those early. Because I'm like, I don't want to give him a yellow quite yet. But it is a yellow card foul. We know that. It's a professional foul, pulling someone back as they're going on the break. That's a yellow card. The foul by Mateo Kovacic on fucking Martin Odegaard is a red card.
That's a red card.
I understand from his angle, if you didn't really see where he caught him, that it wasn't the highest thing. But then you go back and look at it closely, it's like, it wasn't mid shin, but it was above his fucking ankle.
This is my thing. I try, anytime there's one of these kind of decisions, I do try to go back and be like, how would I feel if I was on the other team? And I think if the roles were reversed and
they would be going crazy,
Jorginho did that to somebody else and be like, yeah, that's a red card. Sorry, you got to get sent off. Because
yeah, you're just like, his foot is high, come on. Like,
his bottom foot is raised. He's sliding in. He's jumping in and he's going.
He is lunging. It is a dangerous potential leg breaker challenge. Yeah, he goes studs up into his ankle.
Into his Achilles. And I don't understand this whole thing about like, oh, it's all right if it's on the calf, which is unprotected, but the shin is bad, even though if they're wearing shin guards. We don't need to go down the rabbit hole of the PGA MOL and all this bullshit, but the officiating in the last 3 or 4 years has just been so ridiculous, and it's because they keep introducing more complexity with VAR. The rules change every year. All these nonsense rule changes they did at the beginning of the season to keep the game flowing are just like stupid and keep making the game stop more, and they're not applied evenly, and so these guys are the call, like, you've noticed that the calls have been atrocious this season and the season before.
They always have been, and the thing is, like, I forget which manager said it. Someone said it in a post-match I think last week's results or something. They're like, hey, like, I'm not mad at the car, I'm mad at the driver, right? It's like, I don't think VAR is wrong, right? The vehicle of VAR, I don't have a problem with.
Yeah,
I have a problem with
who's
driving.
Dumbasses in the VAR, the audio of that they released, and I was like, how are these people employed by the PGMOL and
really
watching?
Yeah,
it's just insane, and we don't have to spend a million years
on it. But here's what we are going to spend time on, though, is that Michael Oliver just got back from refereeing a fucking charity match. Right, or whatever, doing a match where he got paid by the owners of Man City, right, or, you know, the owners of Newcastle, any of these things where it's like, hey, like, are should you be allowed to be paid independently by someone who owns a team in the league that you work for outside of this? It just creates a conflict of interest that when something like this fucking happens, like in all other sports, in the American sports, you can't have like any kind of affiliation with any kind of business entity, team, or anything outside of the shit you're working for. And this just creates a position where it's like, hey, why didn't he send off that Man City player? Oh, he collected a check from these fucking people for something else outside of here just a few weeks ago, you know, during whatever break in Saudi Arabia, in the Emirates, whatever fucking place they
are. And listen, man, I will say this much. I'm always in favor of letting the game flow a little bit, letting the game play. Like, especially in the first half, it does suck when people get sent off very early. It changes up the character of the game. See the fucking insane Liverpool-Tottenham game the other day. Yeah. But I think there is something to be said when it's like, if it is a red card offense because it's a dangerous play, like, you got to send them off. And then after this, to go, like, 5 minutes later, not even, really, he comes in again, studs up, not as egregious, but still, it's a studs up challenge.
Yeah, maybe not a red, but
easily
a blatant yellow card.
And he says no, waves
just
it off.
Just immediately, no, get out. No. Yeah. Declan Rice is a big fucking diver. Does he look like Cristiano Ronaldo to you?
I mean, that's the other insane thing. They're always wanting to, they want to do more stuff with VAR all the time. And then there's always like these arbitrary limits of like, well, we can stop the game for VAR for these things, but oh no, we could never stop the game to like look at second yellows. It's like, well, we're already dealing with this bullshit. Well, why don't you send it to the truck?
Why the fuck are they even allowing like Mike Dean on television? You know, they gave him a fuck, you know, I mean, I get the Paddy Power commercial or some shit like that. Even then I'm like, this smug little fucking cunt. Like, he shouldn't be allowed to be on TV. That's all he wants. His little skippy ass, like, dancing after fucking goals being scored and using these big fucking, like, the guy has always been, like, we got, you know, no one has ever said this shit about, you know, Pierluigi Collina or something, you know, like a guy that would want to be like, you know, imagine if they asked him, like, hey, I want you to come be on TV and this and that. Like, this guy enjoys being like a personality, like retorting a certain way. And like, you know, like it was a panel show and Merson got fucking mad at him because he was talking about some shit about the rules and all this. He's like, what do you mean? Like, these players don't fucking know about it because they're this, like, throwing out some really ridiculous shit. That's like really, like, you're a fucking referee. Stay in your lane. Don't throw shade that, oh, well, you guys felt this way and were up in arms because you're players, but you don't really know the rule. Like, get the fuck out of here, Mike Dean. Like, yeah. Like, get him out. Like, that's one of those things that, like, you're only, no one should fucking hire him.
I mean, this is just a deeper problem across the entire league. And I feel like, you know, we would be doing an entire podcast about this if we had lost, and if Kovacic scored a goal or something like that, but he didn't. And ultimately justice was served, but it's still bullshit. And it's just another one in a series of like escalating stupid refereeing decisions that seem just like, they just seem incredible. And I feel like a lot of it really comes down to there's too many new rules. There's too much complexity. There's too much nuance that there's all these unwritten codes and rules. And then they try to codify even more real rules on top of that.
Right.
It's like, either you kind of try to let the game flow and stop dangerous play when you stop dangerous play, or I don't know, send everything to the VAR checks all the time. But like, it just, that was egregious, and Michael Oliver should be ashamed of himself.
Well, my last point I'll make on the referees and the VAR system and all that is that there is a reason why I think it works better in some of the American sports where, hey, it gets sent to New York, gets sent to whatever fucking place, wherever HQ is, it gets sent there so that the league officials, the people that are the official fucking whatever, but not someone who's going to be refereeing your game the next day, the next week. The fact that the VAR officials get rotated then back into as the regular referees, because, oh, we want regular referees to see. It's like, no, give me special referees, rules experts. They can be retired referees, but they cannot be the referees that are going to go out and be the one out on the pitch the next day. It's just like a fucking umpire with a strike zone and shit. Like, hey, you need to let me, you have to let me get my calls, because when it comes around, I'll be the one watching yours. And all of a sudden, it's like they don't want to fuck up the fraternity, the brotherhood of referees, where, hey, I set a call, you overrided me, you have to have my back because we're all fucking referees. It should be separate. There's no reason why this, so it can be totally completely different. They won't feel any obligation to owe someone a call. Maybe they didn't, oh, hey, remember, I didn't fucking overturn your penalty when you said that, even though we know we saw there was contact. I don't want that to be a possibility. Just the way I don't want Michael Oliver refereeing games for, you know, for fucking Newcastle or fucking Man City owner somewhere else, because it probably means nothing. But now you open up the possibility of there being something tainting and, you know, causing something crooked in this fucking game. And that's something we just don't need.
And there's already enough crooked stuff. It's called Man City and Newcastle.
Exactly. FIFA, and, FFP, not being held in account. Let's move on to the second half. So the first half, you know, my words definitely were tepid, you know, tentative, tedious.
Yep. I felt that way until like 35 minutes. And then because I came in with like a real doomer mentality where I was like, ah, we're going to get smashed. I'm just going to prepare myself for this.
Sure.
And then as the game went on, I was like, oh, we're getting better. All right. Okay. I'm enjoying this more. And by halftime, I was like, that was not exciting, but I see what's happening here. And I liked the kind of flow of play. And I liked that we didn't really give them, like, aside from that nonsense in the first 15 minutes, we didn't really give them anything after that. We started to grow into the game. And as soon as I went and made myself a coffee during the halftime, I come back in, I see Martinelli walking on. I'm like, oh yeah, it's on.
Yeah, that's exactly. I nearly fell asleep, and I was like, holy shit, don't do it. I was laying down on the couch. I was like, you know, don't lay down. You don't have enough sleep yet. You know, this.
I slept through the Tottenham game, to be quite honest, and I'm really glad I did.
Yeah, I'm not. I wouldn't go that far for me for watching it, but yeah, I understand the sentiment. I've been there. Yeah, but definitely what perked me up was seeing seeing Martinelli come out of the tunnel, I was like, oh shit, Martinelli's coming on. I was like, oh fuck. You know, I wasn't really like refreshing, you know, like, fuck you, Twitter. Fuck you, fucking Elon, for taking away my tweet deck, you son of a bitch.
Sorry, you mean X? We don't want to get sued by...
Shut up. He can fucking suck a dick. I'm never going to call it that. It's Twitter forever, and their tweets. I'm still tweeting. We're not going to give him that satisfaction.
Nope, never.
Dumbest decision ever. Anyway, but they came out, and within the first 3-4 minutes, you know, Martinelli definitely came on with the intention of making an impact. You know, the first time he got it, he starts, you know, stabbing and diving down the left wing, you know, quick cutbacks, doing some stepovers and shit, like looking real, real flight of foot and looking like a real handful. I personally, I was watching him terrified, worried the first time he was going to sprint down the line that he was going to do his hamstring again. But the man is a monster.
He's also 22 years old.
22-year-old monster. That's the kind of thing that, like, re-injuring that hamstring is the kind of thing that could actually...
Yeah.
Do like what happened to Michael Owen or to all the other, to Hector Bellerin, you know, guys who, you know, whether it be through the knee or ankle injuries or just, you know, pulling a hamstring a few too many times, you know, Theo didn't have that pace for that long. He did for a good while, but a few hamstrings and we get a real serious one, you know, you feel like you can't really explode the same way. So, you know, I do want to wrap Gabby and Cottonwood, but you know what? He sure as hell made a fucking big impression in that half.
Yeah, no, he, like I said, he terrorized Kyle Walker, which is great because fuck that guy and his stupid face. I don't know. You see it where you see the team perk up when he's in there because they know they also Taylor, City were really packing everybody into the middle of the field. And then he came on and you could see them go like, oh, shit, one of us, like one or two of us have to go over there because he's just roasting Kyle and doing a bunch of tricks and around him.
You have to double on him, and all of a sudden it shifts the balance of
and you got our midfield pushing up a little bit more. You know, Jorginho is starting to recycle the ball a little faster. We're pushing the tempo up a little bit more.
Yep.
You could see what they were doing, which I looked at that and I was like, oh, this is not last year's team. This is a more mature team that learned some lessons, and they also learned a sort of like tactical game state where they just felt a lot more calm and in control, where like now that I think back to like the end of last season, we really lost a lot of games because we freaked out and we were sloppy or we going too hard. I mean, people have been like talking this season so far and be like, oh, Arsenal, oh, they're not clicking, oh, the attack's not going well, blah blah blah, and it's like we've given up like three goals in the league, something like that. Like, not, we're still unbeaten. I mean, I think this team has made a big step up, and being able to play the way that they play with a rotating cast of characters, because last year the other thing was like you take out the first choice 11 and then the plan goes to shit and people weren't playing with each other in the same way, they weren't rotating around in the same way, they weren't, you know, the tactics weren't coming off in the same way. What it looks like now is we've had a bunch of major injuries to big stars since the beginning of the season, and we've rotated through. Everybody's done well, knows their job, and I think this game was really good because they came out there, they played the tactical game they wanted to, and then they kept upping the tempo little by little by little, you know, once they saw City just absolutely offering nothing, they're like, okay, well, now we'll have a little bit of stab at them. We'll see.
Yeah, and I felt like there was definitely clear that they had kind of come in, and it was evident in the first half, and it was also evident, especially once it was still 0-0, after they weathered a bit of the storm, they still looked at the 80th minute that they were still playing for a draw, you know, where we had definitely upped the tempo and started to turn the screw. I felt like around 55th minute, we really had started doing it and kind of turning on them, and then they had their first counterattacking break, which didn't end up in an actual chance. I think it got intercepted right as it was like entering the box, you know, some good positional defense, and that we cut the ball out before it got to the final ball. But that was the easiest they'd got to our box the entire match because we had opened ourselves up a bit. And I was like, oh shit. Like, we're still this far away from getting killed on one of their counters. Like,
right. And in their heads, I feel like what they were probably thinking is not even playing for a draw. They're just thinking, we're Man City. We're going to get this, you know, we're going to get this. We're going to play our game, and then we're going to score some dirty goal in the 85th minute and win this. And at the end of the day, they did not it did not come off, and they really didn't look dangerous. And after like the 60th minute or so, especially not when our subs came on.
Yeah, shout out Mikel Arteta for making all the right subs, having all those guys combined for the goal. The fact is, literally, it's all four of them. It's from one to the other to the other to the other. Amazing, amazing stuff. But yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, amazing thing, right? The only two times it's happened all season or his entire fucking Man City career that Erling Haaland had 0.00 XG was against us in the Community Shield and then this weekend against Arsenal in the league.
Yeah.
Wonderful shit.
The defense was pretty imperious today.
Yeah. Big shout out to them. Big shout out to the best fucking defensive central partnership in the league.
Yeah.
Two of the top five center backs, including the number one and probably number four or so. I mean, really, like you can give a case for maybe one or two center backs ahead of Gabriel, but maybe, but I doubt more than two or three. And none over Saliba. That's it.
Yeah. Not that I want on our team. Not that, also none that are 25, 26 or whatever, and have that kind of physical presence, the emotional presence that he has on the field is great.
Yeah, and you know, and he hasn't done it yet this year, but I'm sure they're coming. Remember, he was the highest scoring center back in the league last year. And the year before, I think. I mean, the man is a machine, and they're both just amazing.
And I think it's because he plays next to Saliba, who's so incredible technically and so cool and calm that he starts to look sometimes like he's a little hectic. But actually, if you put him next to like a fucking regular Harry Maguire ass defender, he would look like a cool, calm, collected ball playing center back. He's got good feet. He's not Saliba,
And also of those other center backs that we're talking about, like the ones that are potentially at the same level, they're all right center backs that I think are on a comparable level. As far as like left-footed left center backs, I don't think anyone comes anywhere close. And that's a special thing that in this setup where he may play as the left in a back three or through the center or whatever, but as an outlet, he's a very accomplished passer out of the back, Gabriel. So good on him. But, you know, so regardless of the XG being so little, the 0.44 for Arsenal, we did outshoot City 12-4. You know, quite a few of those shots were nowhere near the target. You know, they were ballooned over.
Yeah, Zinchenko might want to check that last shot he did.
We're used to seeing Odegaard put a few more of those on target. You know, we expect more precision from him. But, I mean, the thing is that he didn't have open chances. He had to hit him around defenses and over defenses. You know, they definitely held the block pretty tight. Their effort all around, I felt like City did a good job of neutralizing most things. But when it came down to it, you know, we were the team pressing and trying to go for that goal later on, and having a guy like Martinelli who immediately came on and took a shot or two, ended up having the most shots out of anyone in the game, even though he only played half the fucking game. So, and, you know, and the good things happen when you shoot. You know, put the ball on target. You know, even when his first shot was a hard one, just right into the chest of Ederson, you know, it's like, all right, well, maybe not middle of his torso, right at him, but he spanked it. He hit it fucking hard, and it was our first shot on target of the fucking match that, like, actually, you know, made any significance. So
yeah, he's got that, you know, he's got that hunger. It's not just the quick feet and the running fast in his game. He has the hunger. He has the aggression. He has the sort of mental willpower to play like that day after day. And I think it's one of the reasons, I mean, we both love him, you know, but I think it's really interesting when you look at the people who have emerged as superstars in this team. Like, there is like a lot of, I mean, Saka obviously is one of the best players in the world, a gem that came out of our academy. He's our boy, our creation, you know, like from the academy, which is why people feel so strongly to him. But also, like, I mean, these guys plucked Gabriel Martinelli out of the fourth division of Brazilian football or something, brought him over for nothing. And, you know, you see that because he loves being at Arsenal. He loves his club. He loves there's a feeling there. It's not just, obviously, like, it's different for different people, but you can tell with the younger guys that are in that cohort, like, they just love playing for this team, and he will lay everything out on the field for it.
I'm waiting for him to have the Hector, like, Cockney London slang. I was watching the post match interview with the Peacock NBC guys.
Oh,
and
they're
asking him, like, "Oh, what are you doing to celebrate the match? You know, you're gonna." He's like, "No, I'm going to dinner with my family. This and my missus. You know, like,
If he starts turning up,
21 years old, he's like, oh, my missus. And
if he starts turning up at the post match things in like vetements or some high fashion stuff, then we know he's gone full Hector.
I mean, he's already doing the Prada photo shoots.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I mean, Handsome FC strikes again.
Yeah, the culture club, man. I will always say that there is, like, people want to talk about, people are trying to microanalyze right now what the rot is at Manchester United and all that. And I think part of it is the culture around the club sucks. And yeah, it's old and stodgy and backward looking. And it doesn't seem like the club as an entity is, you know, pushing in the same direction. Whereas our club, you know, we had some really bad years. It was fucking rough being an Arsenal fan for the past 10, 15 years.
Innovation and resting on your laurels, you know? Like, Man United, like, not having not upgraded anything, right? Ronaldo comes back and he's like, this is everything that was here when I got here in fucking 2003. You know, what the fuck is this? It's like, yeah, you've been resting on, like, well, you know, Fergie made it this way, so this is still okay. Like,
and also it doesn't help that 90% of the television pundits in the football world are ex-Fergie Man United guys who just bang on about, like, the old days. And in my day, we did it this way. And I think that takes a toll on the players. And you look at the guys, you look at the people on our team. Yeah, they're not doing that shit. They're not sitting there. You know, Henry's the best player that's ever been in the Premier League. He doesn't sit there just shitting all day on the new Arsenal players. No, like, he, there's something at the club that I think is very special right now, and it transmits to the players. And maybe it doesn't have that much of an impact, but you can see the way that somebody like Martinelli, or the way that Gabriel was a guy that was kind of like, he's a good prospect, but he wasn't like a top-rated, like, insane world-class defender. This club gave him a chance and gave him, a home to do his shit. And
to be fair, his nickname was already the Brazilian Colossus, so it's not like he didn't have any hype around him.
But
he was in the French league. He wasn't like being recruited by Real Madrid,
right?
You know, well, you know, we got him at a good point, and he developed just exactly as how we would hope.
You know who did have a lot of hype, who is absolutely worth the hype, though, is that boy Declan Rice. That guy, nobody's talking about that price tag anymore.
No, yeah, no one's mad at that. And then you look at fucking what Chelsea paid for Caicedo.
Ooh,
like,
brother.
You paid more than we did.
Yeah.
And that's what you got, and we got this? Like, the... between what you paid, like the valuation, like Caicedo looks like maybe a 50 million pound midfielder, while Declan Rice looks like a 120 million pound midfielder. Like, the value's already gone up since he's joined Arsenal.
I was watching the game, and I remember just he did that one tackle. We all know which one it is. When he came, he just lung busting run back, comes in with a crazy, crazy inch perfect challenge. And I just texted you. I was like, what a sicko. Like, that's he does that all the time. You start watching him during the games, you're like, this guy is just an engine. He turns the ball over up into the attack so effortlessly. He runs the midfield. He's running back, making these crazy recovery runs. Like, he cuts out
so much danger.
Yeah, it's great to have somebody like that back in the team. We have so many. I mean, aside from Thomas Partey being made of rubber bands, we have like so many robust, big, strong, like, large players. It's not the Arsenal from five years ago.
Well, it's funny too, because actually when you mention these large players, I'm starting to include guys like Martinelli and Saka, because like they're fucking built.
Yeah,
you know,
they're growing.
Like, they're growing boys, and they may not be tall, but they are fucking big and solid. Like, you know, they're not losing out on, they're not losing duels. You know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, very robust at all, pretty much every position. You know. I guess just like Zinchenko, not the most robust, but he's still, you know, he's a solid little boy.
He's scrappy though.
He's scrappy, dude, like a motherfucker.
Yeah, you can't have a whole team of 6'4" William Salibas, but you know, I think we're big in the right areas now, where we're like, buddy,
nice.
We have a back line now. Look, I mean, we haven't even mentioned Ben White, who is so fucking good, and he's just consistently really good. And he's just the best shit, like just the best wind up guy in the world. I love him. He you watch his little face, and you're just like, because he actually seems like a really nice guy. Right. When you listen to interviews, he seems like a really cool dude. And then on the pitch, he's just such a bastard.
Yeah, absolute bastard.
But he's not dirty either.
But like the nutmeg in like the 90th minute of like Doku, like cutting back on him. And Doku like realizing immediately he got nutmegged, like reaching back and trying to hold him, but couldn't do shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's something he's going to see him in the tunnel later. Like, hey, nice one, you know? Like, he's just going to get like that little two word.
Yeah. For a man who does not care about football, apparently, he's very good at playing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Salute to Benny Blanco and let his nutmegs continue.
Listen, I'm all about anybody who's really good at their job without caring about it. I think that's the dream for a lot of people. And so Ben White is a personal hero of mine.
Big bless ups to that man. So like reflections, you know. So this match leaves us. Like, you get the big goal from Gabby. We see the game out so expertly, right? We hold the ball. Like even when one time we actually looked like a chance maybe to go for a second, but as soon as it didn't look like it was like 100% on, they turned and took it towards the corner. Then played it back all the fucking way around. You know, 30, 40 more seconds of possession.
Yep.
Whipping it back all the way around, doing that. Raya, but one thing that we didn't get to that was kind of his performance. He said it was shaky in the first half, for as shaky as it was in the first half. And basically, I think I was about to tweet something. I was going to say he leaves a lot to, what was the fucking thing? You know, he leaves a lot to, I don't know. He left me wanting, right? I felt like I wasn't getting anything out of him, even though, you know, we don't know about his direct instructions from Arteta to hold the ball like that. And all that, but I felt like, you know, what we asked for out of him, we weren't quite getting. In the second half, the first time he got pressured like that, we were nervous as fuck. He played a perfect outlet ball to Gabriel Jesus. And from then on out, he played like the fucking, the David Raya that we supposedly paid for. That was the Raya that Arteta brought in, you know. There were nerves in the first half. That second half was the one. That's the guy you pay for.
That's the guy that displaces Rambo. As much as we love, look, I love Aaron Ramsdale.
First half, I was like, I need you to show me more. Because this ain't it.
You know what I need? I need these fucking NBC camera people to stop pointing at Aaron Ramsdale every time there's a David Raya thing. Right. Because the poor guy, I love Aaron Ramsdale. I think he's a great character. Yeah. I think he's an integral part of why we are back where we are.
Absolutely.
It fucking sucks that he is not number one, because
absolutely.
He is very good. He's a very good goalie.
Right.
He's got a lot of skills. He's really not that much different than Raya, except in a few very key things. And it just so happens that all of those key things are the Venn diagram that Mikel Arteta wants and wants for the new system with control. I actually think if he didn't have Raya there, I think with coaching, Ramsdale could be there. Like, he's good with his feet. He's good with distribution. He's got to calm down in certain circumstances. But Raya,
when your goalkeeping coach who has the philosophy with you is the guy who was Raya's fucking coach at Brentford.
Yeah, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, yeah. You know you're fucked when that's the guy who's coming in.
And look, I hope that they do right by Rambo. I hope that if Raya really is going to be the number one, that they sell him and quickly to a big club.
Sell Ramsdale for $60 million next year to fucking
whoever. And I hope he has a great... I'll always love the guy. I think he's a great character.
Absolutely.
But Raya at the end, he, especially once Kai and some of the taller players came on, like Tomiyasu, who's also a monster, came on, you could see him just launching balls. And he was getting his groove then.
He was feeling it by then, because he was hitting those laser ones. They weren't going any higher than 10 feet in the air.
They also took, I think once City took off, Alvarez and Rico Lewis, who are both young and like little maniacs who run around a lot, and would pester him while he was setting up, that he had a little less of that.
A little more breathing room. Those guys had a little more tired legs. Yeah, because I didn't see really Doku doing a lot of like tight pressure up there.
And Eddie is just not that great picking balls out of the air.
That ain't his...
Even though Gabriel Jesus is like 5'6", somehow he's great at it.
Yeah, he's... Well, he can also take it down so many different ways, you know? Like the first ball we talked about, when they pinged at him, he ran back to it and controlled with the outside of his left, you know, like running back to it and catching it on the side of his foot, like it's very Brazilian of him to be able to take it down like that with very little trouble, you know?
Yeah.
To expect Eddie to be able to do that, it's like, you know... That's not real. Like you said, that's not really his game. obviously you're as a forward, especially as a central striker, you need to be able to take it down and turn with the ball. Like that is a huge part of the skill set.
Listen, but January comes around, 50 million, 60 million plus Eddie for Ivan Toney, we're winning the league.
Give me Ferguson. I don't need them talking about us just having a fucking bet. I mean, look, I'll take Ivan Toney. I'll take him.
Ryan Ivan Toney. It's proven. It's been proven.
Yeah.
Against us.
It has been proven. I can't argue with that. If they want to get Ferguson, though, from Brighton, you know.
We might have to make a few more noodle sponsors for the team.
I mean, listen, I'll visit Rwanda.
Yeah.
I'll do my part.
That's a whole other podcast about our shirt sponsors, unfortunately. But
yeah.
What a great end to the game. I had the same emotions as you. I was so stoked when I saw them like all playing it into the corner flag and like playing little rondos and keeping it. I was like, yes, you guys have learned something. You're all like, you've learned the lessons of these games, especially because, again, with the officiating, who fucking knows how much time they're going to put up. I mean, this is the other thing that's pissing me off.
4 minutes we actually
got. Probably 4 minutes was fair, but with the new rules, it's like everybody, I knew this was going to happen for the first 5 games. They would go nuts being very didactic about it, right. And they'd be like, 12 minutes, oh, another 12-minute game. And then people just fall back into their old habits and they're like, it's like 4 or 5 minutes. Okay, whatever. And yeah, that's how much it should have been.
Yeah, I mean, that one felt fine. Anything over 5 minutes would have felt egregious, you know? In the new rules, if it feels weird for anything to be less than 5.
Yeah.
Like, the way the season started, 6 minutes was a low number.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you're using all the substitutions and there's a couple stoppages and if there's any time wasting... But, yeah, I mean, like, happy to see it. Happy that they actually blew the whistle within, like, less than 30 seconds after the 4 minutes went up. Because there wasn't that much time to make that much extra time.
Yeah, no late annoying like, you know, mistake to a Haaland wonder goal. We strangled the game.
That's it. We fucking smothered.
And that's
bitch.
What you need to do when you need to beat the best teams. And City are the best team in the world. They just won the treble, even though only like 500 people showed up to their party for right. that. You know, exactly. they are technically a football team and not just a sports washing enterprise of a petro state.
Totally, definitely.
But they are, you know, they're the best team. They're our bogey team. We needed to beat them. We did. I think having the international break after this is great because you can like rest all of these young players who
Saka
need the rest.
Yeah. Out of the England camp.
Yeah,
thank
Gareth
God.
Southgate, get fucked.
Yeah, well, that, you know, so I definitely feel like that match was a good example of like style versus pragmatism. You know, in the situation, putting a very mature performance, a team in where a good chunk of the core of this team has together at least lived through the last like 5 or 6 of those matches together, and felt that, you know, as a collective unit since Arteta's been there. And I've learned the lessons from it to kind of, you know, give us that kind of controlled, measured performance. And, you know, and look, got the luck of a little bit of the breaks, you know. The goal goes in off fucking Ake's face. You know, Ake doesn't score the one on the other end. You know, he could have changed the entire game. He should have scored, and he put one in off his face. Like,
yeah. You know, we put ourselves in a position to capitalize on luck.
And fortune favors the bold. We were the ones going for the goal at the end. We made our luck. They were very happily sitting back and absorbing. And because they had played so tight and really not given us a real sniff of goal, right? Like I said, that's has to be our lowest XG of fucking who knows God how long, and then it took one going off a guy's face and, you know, completely misdirecting Ederson for it to go in.
Yeah, and when you don't have KDB, you know, that's the thing. I find Man City's football over the past couple of years when they've been winning everything, absolutely like snooze fest. I hate it. It's boring. So boring. But they win games. But they do have that little genius boy in there, and you know, he's like we were saying before, he's getting on there. He's 32. He's got another major injury. I don't see KDB ripping up the Etihad for another 3 seasons or something. They are gonna have to move on from him, and it's hard to move on from like a singular kind of creative talent like that. They don't really have anyone else in the squad right now that can hold the candle to him.
Yeah, and you feel like they're going to have to recruit someone like that, but then, like, does he welcome the new guy under his wing and, you know, try to help him replace himself?
Kevin,
you know?
De Bruyne, famously a warm and friendly guy in yeah. the dressing room. Right, real, yeah. real team player, cuddly guy.
Yeah, he'll love it. He'll be like Aaron Rodgers when they draft another quarterback, right? The same kind of shit. Like, oh, really, huh? That's how you look at this? Well, that's ended. We are now in an interlull. Arsenal go into the break, tied to the top of the league, behind on goal scored to Tottenham.
To some team.
Some tiny tots who are also undefeated.
Which is insane.
Look, I'm not worried about them breaking the fucking Invincibles record, okay?
No. Like,
they're going to lose some matches.
No.
They're going to lose more than one match.
I mean, two things can be true. I really like Ange. He seems like an interesting guy.
Yeah.
He's got a different kind of coaching philosophy. Anything is better than the two fucking creeps that they had in there before. But, like, there is a huge vulnerability to their game. They've been gambling at the casino and getting the breaks every game. Every game that they've played, that they've won this season, has been on very fine margins. People will figure the system out. You know, they're just playing like a team that has a few new things in a new system with a coach who's not a total psychopath, but they're not that good all over the pitch. Like, no one, I mean, that Romero guy is just like a walking red card. There's a bunch of other people in the team like that, and Son is very good, but he's 32 or 33, whatever the Korean age is, because he's like a year younger, actually. I am not worried about Tottenham making a title challenge.
No. I did not really expect them to be so rapidly in a good position for the top four. I thought they would be battling for a top four position. I think now they really can shoot for like third, fourth place. I think Liverpool will outlast them. Mm-hmm. I don't think United will overtake them.
No.
Brighton are kind of stumbling right now. Talking about how the luck has all been going for Tottenham, we have to talk about our next opponent after the interlull, because there is the interesting story and the hilarious story of Chelsea, but I do have the slight fear that their lack of XG at some point is going to pop and they're going to score some fucking goals. Just hopefully not against us.
Yeah. I'm not worried about that Chelsea game in any way in the same galaxy I was worried about the Man City game. Another thing I could do a whole podcast on about how much I hate Chelsea and Roman Abramovich and the way he's ruined the modern game, introducing his whole brand of bullshit. And the Todd Boehly era has just been an absolute dumpster fire, and they deserve every minute of it. But they do have some talented kids.
It's rubbed off on Boehly's other fucking teams.
Well, yeah, that's
his other blue team is currently.
But that's, you know, I'm not a FIFA player. Like, I'm not a. I play video games, but I'm not a big FIFA dude. It's like me.
It's not, no, fuck FIFA. Their name's not even on it anymore. FC 24.
Well, it's like me going in that team is assembled like me going into a FIFA game and just being like, I'm gonna pick all the players with the high ratings. And, you know, they're playing like it. I mean, Pochettino is a good coach and manager, but like that
club won anything.
Yeah, he's like serviceable. He's better than the shit that he's better than Frank Lampard.
Well, inanimate carbon rod is better than Frank Lampard.
Yeah, they have some players there.
He started Aubameyang after not playing for fucking like 20 matches.
They just did that thing, and it's like, it's very funny because everybody was leveling a lot of like, you know, oh, you Americans don't know shit about football kind of criticism at Todd Boehly. And then he was like, yeah, I'll show you. I'm going to sign six players to the same position. And they're like, yes, okay, this is what we were talking about. So I think that they will at some point maybe like figure it out, but they have these little flashes. Mostly they look like a mess. Mikhailo Mudryk, God rest his soul, will probably never score a goal. It's very funny.
He scored one last week.
He
broke that. But yes. I know what you mean.
I think we have the tools to deal with their particular threats, and I don't think they have the midfield or the defense to deal with our threats.
Well, we go to the Bridge on October 21st. That will be the first match back from the interlull. The international break, hopefully no one gets hurt or anything along those lines. bless up that fucking Bukayo Saka gets to rest a little bit.
Yeah, I think I just saw a thing where he's not going.
No. Yeah. He went to the camp. He got assessed. He got sent home. He's chilling now.
Hopefully that doesn't mean it's way worse than.
Yeah. Hopefully it's just like, okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, that's basically the thing. That was the rule. Only Fergie was able to pull it off, where if you play the last match, you can still pull them out and be like, oh, you know, they actually hurt. They can't go. If you play the last fucking match, and everyone knows that we would have played Bukayo Saka if we could against City, like, he didn't play, well, guess what? He doesn't get to play for you in fucking England either, you know?
Yeah.
They could have pulled that shit, and that stupid-ass, I mean, Southgate knows that that's his guy. That's the guy who's continued to show up for him, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, that's...
He's going to start every match he can,
because Southgate... Keeps him in those fucking...
Keeps him in his fucking job. Keeps those stupid suspenders.
Yeah,
his
fucking suit coats.
His little three-piece.
It's getting, you know, I think it's my personal theory about Gareth Southgate is he's got those things wired a little too tight, and they're cutting off the oxygen to the part of his brain, and that's why he messed with Ben White.
Yeah, yeah. What on earth did he do? Or Ben White's just like, he probably just called him out. He might have like said something in front of the whole team, like, you know, like, or just like made some subtle joke that he's like, he says something about me.
I mean, Ben White probably was just like, hey, man, I got to go home. I forgot
he's
a package.
He's like, I'm not even playing. Like, yeah, I'm just going
to
go.
Yeah, I got a package coming to my house. I got to get out of here.
See you later. Yeah, that was something. Someday he'll get back. But for now, I mean, honestly, considering that Ben White plays every single fucking match for us in whatever position, except, you know, with the one exception where he didn't start against Long, right? That's the first match he's rested the entire season. You know, happy for him to get that rest.
Yeah.
One exciting new uptick. I'm not really, it's a little early to get into the transfer season speculation of the January window, but the one good thing that I really fucking enjoy that I've heard is them talking about Arsenal being back in for Pedro Neto from Wolves.
Yeah.
I fucking loved that kid since before he got hurt when we were first scouting him. He's got the sauce. He can be the Martinelli on the left, or he can be the Martinelli on the right. He can do it on both sides like that. And as a guy who can be the rotation, so that if we do have to sub Martinelli and we don't want to go the route that of the Trossard playing the fucking, you know, the inverted central midfielder, you know, because Trossard really feels like when we used to have a Rosicki, or like when we used to have Nasri, you know, as one of the wide players. You play with one real wide guy, one central midfielder playing out wide to give us greater control. That's the kind of guy who can bring the pace and be the other target, you know. I mean, it pretty much means Reece Nelson's never going to fucking play anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, man. Some, you know what? He got a contract. He's gonna get enough performances that if we happen to win something this year, he gets a medal.
Yeah.
And if we bring in Pedro Neto in January, I'll tell you what, we have a much better chance of winning the fucking Premier League or going deeper in the Champions League. So
yeah, and that's the one I fucking want to see. You know what though? Reece is also a good homegrown player. You can sell him for good money.
And that's why you extended his contract again.
Exactly. Wolves love to sell their best players because they're kind of like always in a weird financial
FFP shit.
I think they're still dealing with the fallout from basically letting Mendes launder through their club or whatever they were doing.
Right, of course.
But yeah, it seems like if you go to Wolves with a big sack of cash, they're like, yeah, whatever, sure, take our best player.
Yeah, I mean, Ruben Neves, what did they pay? What did the fucking...
Oh, City played, what, 75 million something for him?
No, not City.
Neves went to City, and then
Ruben Neves went to... Ruben Neves went to Saudi Arabia for $60 million or some shit, right?
I mean...
Yeah, let's, cool. Well, once again, yeah.
get the bag, I guess.
See you later.
You know, 3 years out of your prime career, cool. I hope that works out, and I hope you buy a bunch of really dumb swimming pools in your mansion or something.
Right.
But, yeah, hopefully we get some beefed up recruitment in January to fill the gaps. But honestly, like, I feel really good about this squad. Like, every week, you know, even when we have injuries, I think last year when we would have an injury, I'd be like, oh, shit, this is like, obviously Saliba you can't replace. We saw what happened. But yeah. A lot of the time when I see the team sheet, I'm like, all right, these guys are all pretty good. They all know how to play with each other. They all know the system. They all do a job. You know, some of them, like Zinchenko, has his little thing where, like, nobody can really be Zinchenko, even if they try, because he's a madman and he's a tactical genius. But Tommy can go in there and fill in pretty well and
Tommy's
do another
amazing,
job.
Man. Yeah. And, you know, the one thing that we do have this year, and, like, obviously the you know, you knock, touch wood, fucking no injuries to Saliba. But at least at this point now, that if something like that were to happen, you can move Ben White back into center back. Yeah. Or if, because he's become so natural and his understanding with Saka on the right is so good, you could just put fucking Tomiyasu at center back.
Yeah, you know? He's very good. Plays there for Japan.
He's extremely good. He's extremely good at center back.
Kivior looks like he's actually settled in a little bit better. His physical ability is really good. I think him getting a little bit better with English and getting a little bit better acquainted with the team.
Yeah.
The past couple times I've seen him, I'm like, oh right, this is why we paid money for this guy. He looks good. If he can deal with the bullshit in Serie A, he's going to be fine.
I think he's going to come good. It's definitely one of those guys that, like, hey, he is a, you know, he might not ever become the first choice center back, but like that he will be a very good defender and be in high demand. And that, like, you know, just the way, like, Koscielny, you saw he had the tools when he came, but he needed to fill out a little more. Kivior already had a little of the physicality. He was, like, less, you know, and he's, I don't think he's going to bulk a ton, but he's already a strong bastard and a guy that, like, you know, feels, it looks like he's adapted. It doesn't look like the physicality is going to be an issue for him in the league.
No. And he's versatile, too, you know. I think that's a really great thing about so many players on this team. It's just like being able to chop and change when there's an emergency, to weather the storm of, you know, people can play, each of them can play three different positions and be good at all of them. That's
right.
That's a huge thing. And I think that's going to take us really far. Whether or not we win the league, who knows? But I will say that as somebody who's been an Arsenal fan since the late 90s and been through the good years and the bad years, like, I don't know, last season was a pretty damn enjoyable season. It's sure one was. Of the best times I've had. We didn't win the league, but, like, whatever, you know, like, Man City is not a real team. They're a soulless enterprise of a petro state. And, you know, Pep Guardiola is amazing, but, like, what a great vibe there is around the club, and what great players we have. You look up and down that roster and you're like, I like all these guys.
Yeah.
I really like them. Everybody's pulling in the right direction. You got no weirdo Aubameyang, like, sourpuss in the locker room kind of stuff. It feels great around the club, and, you know.
Yeah, and more power to him for doing that. And, like, the way the club has seamlessly integrated the generation, now that there's enough distance between this team and the team of 20 years ago, which was, you know, the foundation of the beginning of, well, yeah, it's exactly 20 years ago, was the invisible season. That there's enough distance. These guys are all retired. None of them are, like, you're not living directly in the shadow of the guys that were before you. Arsenal fans also now have to remember of playing with fucking Johan Giroud and fucking Flamini and Senderos. And, well, I guess those guys
are better than, you know, the fucking Mustafi and
Socrates Papastopoulos all Mkhitaryan for a little while.
Mesut Ozil taking a nap on the pitch for three seasons.
Yeah, absolutely coasting. Yeah, terrible. All that shit. And so that, you know, you get a little separation from it. You appreciate having guys like this in the team again. But the seamless integration that you said, the big thing that you said about everyone pulling in the same direction, no one is fucking hanging these guys out to dry. I mean, which they haven't really had to because they've been pretty good. But, you know, that basically that, like, especially since the progression last year, you know, all these guys, you know, you have Freddie, right? You know, you have Freddie, you have all the people, you know, Gilberto Silva and fucking Ray Parler doing the tour. You know, we saw them here in LA when they were here. You know, the rest of the guys the Edu's the guy, since he's the guy making it happen behind the scenes. You know, and the connection is generation that the next generation after that of Arteta and Mertesacker running the academy.
Yeah.
You know, like these are all guys that, you know, have the right fucking, you know,
and that's
right
what happens when the holistic thing around the club is going well, because you know, people want to be a part of that project. And I think that's great. And, like, you know, there's not every player is going to want to come back and want to do that. But I think you see the ones that do. I mean, we met Lauren and Gilberto and all that at the fan event. Those guys were pumped to be back and to be back around the fans. And there's just a good vibe around the club. I mean, we haven't mentioned one thing, the fans. I mean, the Emirates used to be a pretty quiet place. I went there in 2017, the only time I've been there. We beat Man United 3-0 that day. Ozil had a worldie or two. So it was, like, good vibes, but it wasn't that loud. I mean, you heard North London forever at the end of the game, or the noise after the goals are scored, the Ashburton Army, all these things. It's just like the club is a different place.
Yep. And long may it last. More power to it. Yeah. Gunnerblock saying that he already has tinnitus. And so he's like, I need to start taking my fancy earplugs at the match. I mean, that's,
you can hear it through the TV.
Yeah, absolutely. And still to this day, which we've always had the best fucking away fans, but even more raucous, even louder. They must have some new recruits in there. You know, some of those new Ashburton Army kids, you know, are now you know, engaging and being part of that and doing, you know, giving the club a good name. You know, we sing the fuck out of everywhere we go.
Yeah.
Everywhere we go. You can hear them louder than every single fucking team we go to play against.
Yeah. And, you know, unlike the, everybody always points to the Newcastle fans, you know, as being this force. And now it's like, okay, well, you have a lot of that vibe, but at the end of the day, now you took the Petro dollars too. And eventually you're going to end up like a bit like City. Also, you know, our fans all generally have their, you know, front teeth and, are not a bunch of fucking mouth breathers like the Geordies up there, but you know,
come for me,
Newcastle
breed.
Fans. I don't care.
Yeah, come find him. We'll let you know.
I was as much as I'm joking about Newcastle, it was actually nice. See, the scenes before that PSG game were pretty crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
I, as a French person whose mom was born like a very close to PSG. We all think that it's basically a fake club, mom was like, we never really had this club when I was younger, and it was very funny to see them get humiliated like that.
Yeah, good stuff across the board. And a good week and a good fucking beginning of the season to Arsenal. We are still undefeated. You know, there's a few matches we could have done better in. You know, obviously the fucking Spurs match could have been won, but you know what? We're top of the league right now. You know, I had the feeling, you know, earlier after watching the first couple of matches, I had a feeling that we might have to be the team to beat Manchester City to save and protect our lovely unbeaten run, the Invincibles. But truly the fact that they lost two matches in a row for the first time in fucking years is great. And also means that we are currently sitting ahead of them.
And one of them was the Wolves, yeah. Which is insane,
which is fucking insane, but bless fucking Wolves, bless Wolves. Good on them for doing that shit. Cause that was fantastic, and we are ahead of these guys, and I don't want to play from behind against City.
Yeah,
I don't.
No,
like we all know the run that they pulled at the end of last season is very possible, and don't want to see it again. So, to that, and to continued Arsenal victories, and to health for all these motherfuckers. Thank you so much, Colin, for coming on. It's been a blast.
Thank you.
I hope you had fun here on the Pintcast with us.
Yeah,
you can follow Colin on Instagram at Colin X Miller.
Yeah, DJ Mills.
DJ What's Mills in the Casa. If you are in the East Coast, you will be seeing him in clubs and places like that near you soon. If you're in LA, catch him at some of his last gigs here in the rest of this month.
Yes.
Everybody.
Peace out. Yeah. Friday the 20th at Club TG in Atwater. But
this Thursday night, with Kitamami at the Shortstop
Echo also, Park. Yeah. But you know, we'll me and Joaquin only have a few Arsenal games together before I depart for the East Coast. But you know, this is the great thing about following the club, and this club especially, is you know, you're wherever you are, there's Arsenal supporters clubs, fan clubs, great people, and I think we are to a whole as a fan base, we are fucking pumped.
And yeah, let's get it. Let's do something special this year. Let's bring a cup home. Fuck it. Champions League, whatever. League, one of them things. Those will do. Make it happen. Until the next time, thanks so much, Colin. Catch you later.